Channel 4 has not confirmed reports that Married at First Sight UK has been axed or cancelled, despite growing scrutiny around the programme, and with the broadcaster now very much at the centre of questions over what happened behind the scenes. MPs have now written to Channel 4 and Ofcom, raising what they describe as serious concerns about the broadcaster's response to allegations of rape and sexual assault linked to the programme. Multiple allegations have now emerged, including claims of rape, non-consensual sexual activity, and threats made between participants during filming. At least one contestant is understood to have raised concerns while production was still underway before the series was broadcast, and yet the programme still went to air.
One of Channel 4's biggest hits, now one of its biggest problems. Married at First Sight UK regularly attracts more than 3 million viewers.
I don't think that because you're going on reality TV, you deserve in any way for things like this to happen to you.
My hope was to find someone kind and nice. He said that if I told anybody what had happened, that he would get someone to throw acid at me. We were in our apartment on the sofa, and he tried to have sex with me, and I kept saying no, that I didn't want to do it. After airing, I took a total nosedive with everything because of how it came across, and then it got to the point that I was so low.
It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. Well, police are now urging anyone who may have been affected to come forward as investigations into what happened at Married at First Sight UK continue. Channel 4 says it disputes some of the allegations, but has removed the series from circulation and launched an external review into how the programme was handled and what safeguarding measures were put in place. But it raises two central questions. What did Channel 4 know, and when did they know it? And if concerns were raised before broadcast, why was the series still aired without a pause or significant intervention? And this situation raises even wider questions about reality television and whether formats built on accelerated intimacy and emotional pressure can properly protect those who are taking part. Well, in a moment, I'm going to be joined by Tanya Horrock. She's a professor of film and feminist media studies and research lead director at the Cambridge School of Creative Industries. She says reality TV care washes its reputation, and its own reality is built on flimsy foundations. But first, with the very latest from the UK, where the fallout continues, Scott Bryan is TV critic and broadcaster, and he joins me on News Talk Daily now. So, how many people tuned into that documentary, do we know, on Tuesday night? And what has the fallout been?
So, the early figures say about 1.5 million people watched the documentary on Monday. I mean, that was only with 3 hours notice because, of course, the story broke at around 5 p.m. and then the story aired on BBC One at 8. It's subsequently been quite high up on the BBC iPlayer. So I think quite a lot of people are watching it in regards to catch up. And, you know, this is following the BBC and this Panorama investigation sort of looked at two allegations by women that they were raped by their on-screen husbands, and a third who allege a non-consensual sex act. So I think what we've had over the course of the last sort of 2 days is essentially developments in terms of what Channel 4 are, how they are responding to this. There was a press conference earlier this afternoon. It was in regards to their annual report, which they have to speak to the media anyway. But this was the sort of the first time that, Channel 4 have kind of had Q&A directly from the press, and they've said that they are deeply sorry over these rape allegations from cast members of Married at First Sight UK, stating that the woman's distress was, quote, clear.
And they hadn't really acknowledged that distress, had they, before, and they hadn't been a clear apology. And in fact, Channel 4 seemed to suggest that they were at a remove from all of this. This is not something that they were necessarily responsible for.
I would be inclined to agree, yes. I mean, I think originally the Channel 4 response to the documentary was quite combative. We then also had Channel 4's boss relatively new Priya Dogra, who's just been in the role for a few weeks, she declined to apologise when she gave a statement outside Channel 4 headquarters on Monday, announcing or giving an update in regards to an external review. She did express her sympathy, but when asked, you know, whether she was wanting to apologise to the woman, she walked away and didn't give a response. So this feels to be the case now that Channel 4 are engaging more directly. And I think after the amount of public anger that there's been in regards to this story, I think they are sort of wanting to be seen to be taking urgent action. I think, you know, there will be still questions in regards to where does the show really go from here. Channel 4 had pulled all of the episodes from their streaming service. They said that that was because they didn't want the general public to essentially try to work out who these allegations were from, which contestants, because Panorama had changed the identity of two of the people who had spoken on that Panorama on Monday. There's also been various speculation in regards to whether Married at First Sight UK will be axed. There's already a film, a series made in the pipeline. Channel 4 today say that it has not been axed, but at the same time, they haven't really given a commitment of when that series will air. And I think also, you know, they've announced an external review into welfare of contributors. But I think what will now happen is probably a nationwide conversation, or at least a TV industry-wide conversation, in regards to whether the most up-to-date welfare guidelines introduced about 3 or 4 years ago were adequate, were suitable, you know, because clearly something has gone wrong here for these allegations to occur in the first place.
Yeah, I thought it was quite extraordinary that Priya Dogra didn't have an answer on whether or not this series will be back on our television, despite all of the mounting controversy. She wouldn't say it's been cancelled. She wouldn't say it's been axed.
Yeah, I mean, I think Channel 4, this is one of their most popular programs. It has about 3.5 million viewers. It's also very important with younger viewers, you know, between the ages of, let's say, 16 to 24. I think we have had, you know, reality shows that have had no terrible situations happen with them, still make it to air in the end. You know, Love Island came back after a very different circumstance, but Love Island came back to air following the death of both several former contestants and also one of the show's presenters, and it's still a mainstay of TV now. So it'll be interesting. Personally speaking, you know, purely as a sort of TV critic and commentator, you know, I can't see this show returning in any way, shape and form. I think partially as a reputation issue. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been there's been a huge outcry in regards to this, but also I think in regards to just the format of the program, you know, essentially being match made with somebody who you don't know, and highly recommended intimacy with the individual, just makes, I think, in this context, following what these allegations have been, just feels inherently uncomfortable. You know, it comes down to what policies could be introduced to make people who appear on shows feel better protected. Is there more industry regulation that could be introduced so that broadcasters do have better oversight over production companies? Because the way that the TV industry works is that a broadcaster essentially just gives a production company lots of money, and then they go away and make a show, and there's not that much day-to-day interaction. But also at the same time, one thing that I've heard over the course of the last few years is that there could be sometimes too much regulation, too much red tape that affects the large majority of very good program making that then get bogged down. So I think, you know, this is the challenge that it's got to face, because of course we seeing, you know, allegations of absolutely terrible scenarios that ideally could have been prevented if there were adequate routines and practices put in place.
All right, Scott Bryan, thank you for taking the time to speak to us today.
Thank you. Cheers.
Tanya, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us today on News Talk Daily. Can I ask you, as somebody who has written in the past about how uncomfortable you are with certain aspects of reality television, how you felt watching that Panorama documentary?
I found it very upsetting and very disturbing. But as you just alluded to, like, I can't say that I was surprised by any of it, given what I know about the working conditions for reality television programs of that kind.
So not surprised, really, ultimately?
No, I'm afraid not.
And why do you say that? What is it about those working conditions that concerns you?
What concerns me? I mean, looking back now, I used to watch Maths and I was always concerned about the misogyny on the show and the potential for gender-based violence. And what concerns me is how these shows set up conditions for intimacy to take place that are highly risky. And I mean, Maths is a very extreme example, having two strangers get fake married and then have to immediately share a bed together. I mean, the format of the show is setting up problems. It's creating risk, and that has to be acknowledged. It's not just about the individuals, it's about the actual design of these programs.
So it's actually the format of the program, the way it tries to engineer intimacy and all of this emotional intensity and rapid relationship formation, all of that you think creates risks?
I absolutely think it creates risks. They want to generate entertainment out of these people's relationships. There's alcohol consumption. They have to live in close quarters. And I just feel that not enough care goes into shaping the format of these programs and that that needs to be changed urgently. I do worry a lot about how when these events do happen in these terrible things do happen of sexual misconduct, sexual harassment, the producers will throw their hands up and say, oh, this is terrible, we must do something. But it's always reactive instead of being proactive. They need to put safety measures in place from the start and think about the design of these programs from the beginning so that reality television participants are kept safe.
I mean, you will hear from the producers of these programs, from the production houses who make these programs, from even the channels that air these programs, that they are aware of the duty of care that is there and that they do put, I suppose, safeguards in place to protect these people. Is this something, in your opinion, that the industry has really actually operationalized?
I mean, in recent years, they have been paying much more lip service to this concept of a duty of care. But I think what I would like to see is more of an ethics of care that goes into the design and the format of the program. I think there's been a lot more emphasis on the broadcasters trying to protect themselves from being accused of negligence than there has been on safeguarding participants. One of my projects is on intimacy coordinators. And as you know, or you might know, intimacy coordinators tend to work on fictional TV shows and films to help keep actors safe and make sure that consent is embedded into the working conditions. And some people would argue that there's a real need for intimacy coordinators to be working on reality television shows as well, especially when those shows are built around sexual intimacy.
And yet I would have worked years ago as a young researcher and celebrity booker on Love Island. And I remember flying over to Fiji and spending a few weeks over there on one of the original Love Island series. And the participants had almost constant access to psychologists on the programs. You know, they didn't have those intimacy coordinators as you speak about, but there was a psychologist who was there for them, who was available to speak to them. Is that not enough?
I think it's important, but I don't think that that on its own is necessarily enough, especially because we have to remember that these programs take place in a wider digital media surround. And after these participants leave these programs, they have to deal with the reality of that with all the social media attention. So I think it's very, very complex. And even if they give consent to appear on the show and they have certain psychological support while they're there, what happens afterwards? These are really big questions that need to be asked. And just watching that Panorama series and listening to the victim testimony, I just really hope that people will listen to what these participants are saying, because I'm not sure that that has happened. And what really depresses me is how this happens time and time again, where there's a big expose, there's a big revelation, and there's a lot of media attention, and then there's silence. And the same working conditions somehow allow are allowed to continue, because the TV industry is very hierarchical. It's all about time is money, power. And I just think that things don't change until the next scandal. And it just really worries me. So I hope that maybe this is a wake-up call for people to actually do something, so broadcasters and production companies will take this more seriously and listen to participants.
Yeah, I just wonder if these allegations really do expose the tensions between that duty of care rhetoric, which is there within reality television. And I think a lot of people working within this industry actually do try hard to provide that duty of care to these participants, but the commercial pressures of producing this emotionally intense, high conflict content that viewers, it appears, can't get enough of.
Yeah, I mean, I think the commercial pressures are huge. And I mean, I avidly watched MAFS. I'm ashamed to say it.
Yeah,
and
watched it too.
I mean, I did feel I was hate watching it, but I hated watching it. And I also hated myself for watching it because I could see the problems. And my problem with MAFS always was that I felt like the structure of the program was setting up alibis. So there's always terrible misogyny. There's always men treating women really badly on that show. But then you'll have the experts come in and call it out and say, that's not acceptable. You shouldn't be talking to her like that. And yet the whole series is engineered to put that bad behavior on display. So I always felt like it was quite disingenuous. And when I look back now to watching that season with Shona, it does really upset me, because I remember at the time watching Shona and just really feeling something was very wrong. And I think it just, it's really terrible.
You know what? You mentioned there that, you know, you feel like you've seen this story before. And I feel that too. You know, we've been in this place before with content, either on Channel 4 or indeed on other channels as well, that seem to create environments that allow for women to be exploited or to be in these vulnerable positions. And yet, nothing really changes. We have been here before. We've seen it before. We've heard about it before. We've seen documentaries about it before.
I mean, we have all the evidence now. We've had evidence for years. And, you know, let's go back to 2017 when Me Too went viral. It was a hopeful moment. I think some of us thought, okay, like, as in terms of me being a feminist scholar, we thought, okay, finally people are catching up. They're aware that of what's happening, the crisis of violence against girls and women. And yet, fast forward to now, and it's like Me Too never happened in many regards. And the same things are happening on the sets of film and TV shows that have always happened. And I think this is the wider frame for this whole discussion, is the crisis of violence against girls and women that's happening in society at large and that we see on these programs. So it is very concerning. And yeah, we have to keep fighting it, but it's hard not to get quite depressed when you see these stories time and again. And
yeah, I think about Russell Brand, and I think about...
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, I think about the allegations made against him that were there for such a long period of time that I appreciate now are before the courts and he denies. But in terms of the allegations themselves, they were there and they seem to have been just hidden or ignored in plain sight.
Absolutely in plain sight. And I was rewatching the Channel 4 documentary about him. And again, that was another big expose, right? And it's a Channel 4 production, which is interesting because now we're back to Channel 4 being at the center of this. But yeah, I mean, hiding in plain sight, he was making open jokes about his sexually abusive behavior. And this is a theme, right? This theme of hiding in plain sight. We saw it with Jimmy Savile. We've seen it many, many times. And so we have to ask ourselves, like, how is that, like, what structures of power are enabling these men to operate so openly in a way that becomes normalized and that we accept it, and that this keeps happening over and over again so that things get forgotten so quickly and then we move on to the next scandal. And it's constantly this dynamic of uncovering, breaking the silence, but then going back to the normal working conditions and the wider societal patterns of behavior that perpetuate this crisis of violence against women and girls. So, I mean, there are no easy answers to how to solve this problem, but we really have to be trying. And like, the entertainment industry does have a lot to answer for. And I think even just the very format of MAFS, like, we have to question that. Why were we all thinking that this was a normal thing to be watching? Two strangers getting fake married and then having to share a bed and have sex with each other and talk about it to experts. Like, is this normal? Like, should this be normalized? I don't think so.
No. And when you say it like that, it doesn't. And yet, I know so many people who have watched, loved, debated, chatted, WhatsApp grouped, filled with conversations around Married at First Sight. You mentioned the wider misogyny in the media across the world. And I was struck by Kate Blanchett's this week when she said, you know what, really, Me Too, it's just a distant memory. She's still on film sets a decade later and there's 10 women to 75 men. And really, she doesn't feel we've made any progress at all.
I mean, I would like to think that some progress has been made, but I agree with her wider point that it's still a male-dominated industry and there's still terrible things happening on sets. Like, it was a hopeful moment, Me Too, in 2017, and that's when the role of the intimacy coordinator emerged. And that was an important development. But again, you can't put everything on just one role like that, because that's not going to solve anything. Like, it's an important role, and I completely respect what they're doing, but there has to be wider structural change in the industry. And it just comes back to the fact of how difficult it seems to be to make that change because of hierarchical it is and how, like, the power dynamics of it. So it's very, very complicated, but we have to keep trying. We have to keep putting pressure on production companies, on the regulators, and focusing on the participant experience.
I see Channel 4 have obviously removed the episodes. They say there's now an external review. The head of Channel 4 said she was sympathetic towards the victims here. She's come out on Wednesday and said she's actually sorry towards the victims, which is seen as, I think, a positive step. And we see the UK Parliament's House of Commons Culture, Media and Sport Committee writing to Channel 4, writing to Ofcom, saying these allegations are horrifying, saying there's a lot more questions to answer. Does that encourage you at all?
I mean, it's a good start, yes. So we have to keep applying pressure so that when the media attention to this dies down, that things don't just return to normal. So yeah, we just have to keep applying the pressure and making sure that they follow through on that change, and that it's not just about holding individuals to account, but the wider structures of power and thinking about the formats of these shows a little bit more carefully. And also just thinking about reality TV participants, because I think in the past, like, their experience has somehow been overlooked in this. There's been more focus on the representation and what we as members of the public are prepared to watch on TV. But we also have to think about what their experience is. Like, they're at the heart of these shows and they need to be treated more fairly, and there needs to be more ethical consideration.
Any sense that reality TV is done, gone for good?
Not a chance, I would say. I don't think so. I think the reality TV machine is too big and makes too much money for it to just suddenly disappear. But it has to be reformed.
Tanya Horek, thank you so much for speaking to us and bringing us all of your insights into this conversation. That's actually a little bit depressing that we're having to have again. But thanks for your time.
I know. Thank you so much, Kara.
Well, if you have been affected by any of the issues raised in this piece, you can call the Rape Crisis Centre on a free phone, 1800 77 8888, or call Samaritans Free on 116 123. That's it from me, Ciara Doherty, until tomorrow morning. Goodbye.